Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Welcome to La Liga Weekly. Football politics is a complicated business. Sometimes we wonder why we can't just get on with the game in peace. Take Gareth Bale in trouble with those Real Madrid snowflakes again. All he says was that he'd rather play for Wales, that golf's better than football, that the Plaza Mayor is a dump compared to Merthyr Tydfil Town Centre, and that Ashley Williams is a better central defender than Sergio Ramos. People are so touchy. Now, Gareth actually said that international football is more exciting than club football. That's his opinion, and he's wrong. And he's just saying Gerard Moreno did his best to make Spain versus Malta interesting by repeatedly kicking the ball wide of the goal, pretending it was hard to breach the rock-solid Maltese defence. But then Pau Torres and Dani Olmo came on and gave the game away by scoring from a yard out. The Spanish Federation, meanwhile, has announced the details of the Spanish Super Cup, which will be played in Saudi Arabia in January. A progressive move, they say, that will see the men and the women watching football together in the stadium. Yes, they've taken the Super Cup to Saudi Arabia in the name of women's rights. Oh, yes. You know, if anything, they're too honourable. Time at Barcelona could be up. We'll check on the views of Barca fans on whether he's been mistreated. We'll edit out the bits where they're being rude to each other. And it's definitely time up for David Villa, one of, or perhaps the best Spanish striker. We'll get to the subject of La Liga and the KGB on Twitter later. If you want to give us a follow on the social media, Terry's at Terry Gibson 88. My new one, my new exciting one that's £1 million launch this week, John Driscoll 2020. So please follow me. I need some friends again. And at La Liga underscore weekly is the joint one that we have. So, Terry, there is football, international football, of course, and the Segunda, which we neglect. I was thinking I might have a long conversation about Oviedo Sporting Gijón, but it was a nil-nil draw, wasn't it? So,
oh, no.
Yeah, they didn't really seize the weekend, the Segunda. So, shall we crack on? We'll get to all of the subjects that I advertised earlier. Start with the international football. George, thank you, George. How far will Spain go in the Euros? Individually, who is your pick to win the whole thing? Who are the dark horses? And he says Portugal for him. So first question first, how good is Spain? We didn't learn anything new, did we, against Malta?
No, we haven't learned anything new, I don't think, from any of the major teams that we expect to contest who's going to be the champions in the Euros, because I find it frustrating. First of all, I don't like the international breaks because we go without league football. And the format now is, with so many teams qualifying, I'm looking at it, and apart from players picking up caps, adding to their appearances and to their goal scoring totals, I see the whole thing is performed by a bunch of players, coaches, that are lacking motivation, if I'm being brutally honest. And that means that the managers, coaches of the bigger nations, the teams that will undoubtedly qualify, go for an 18-month period of qualifiers where they know the end result. They know they can afford a slip-up. Therefore, they're quite happy to chop and change the teams, look at players maybe for the future. The whole thing looks undecided. It looks indecisive. And I'm struggling to, myself, who watches pretty much any football I can, I'm struggling with the motivation to watch some of these qualifiers because there's just no intensity in terms of desperation to qualify. The teams all qualify that we expect to. Most of them have done it with ease. And it's hard now, at this moment in time, to pick out team. What I would say is I don't think there's an outstanding team in European international football at the moment. I don't think any of the teams that we expect to compete to win it are at their best. And it's hard to judge some of them. I mean, Belgium and Italy have gone through fantastic campaigns, but the level of opposition isn't anything remotely what it's going to be like in the last eight of the Euros. England have sailed through, Spain have sailed through. Maybe it's been harder to watch France and their struggles. Portugal have finished behind Ukraine. I think it's impossible at this moment in time. But what I would say is that I think if you're in form or you're confident and you build confidence and you build form in that competition, then there's probably eight teams that are capable. I would say my dark horses, and I've been fortunate, we've both been fortunate enough to work on the qualifying campaign as commentator and co-commentator. I liked what I saw from Ukraine and I liked what I saw from Turkey. So they might be dark horses. But I think that it will be the usual crowd that will compete to win it. Germany haven't been great. No one's been great, but they don't need to be. And that's the big problem with the international breaks, the lack of motivation from the players. There's no real urgency from the coaches, the players, and I have to say the supporters. And what we get now is players racking up the caps, racking up the goals, because they have to find something that motivates them to play in these international games.
You wouldn't have said this about 2 years ago, Terry, but the Nations League is so much better than the normal round of qualifying games because you had competitive matches. I know it was sort of we viewed it as a bit of a made-up competition, but you know, truth be told, at least they were playing teams of a similar standard, and at least you were straight into the competitive football, semi-competitive football. And football basically needs to be competitive. Otherwise, you might as well watch dancing, mightn't you, if the football's not competitive.
Yeah, the Champions League is almost like that as well, with the group stages of the Champions League. It's great for some of the teams from the smaller nations to get into the group stages. They've worked bloody hard to get in them the majority of the time. But then it's the same teams that go through. Every now and then you get a big surprise. There are the odds group here and there in the Champions League where there's three really good teams and one of them is going to end up in the Europa League. But by and large, the same teams qualify for that. Then the real competition starts when we get to the knockout stages. So, and that was also a quick-fire burst of action, wasn't it, the Nations League? It wasn't over an 18-month period of games where you know... I mean, just take England's group, for example. Any points that they dropped was always going to be a surprise. It's weighed heavily in the favour of the major nations. You get the odds group. We've had Netherlands and Germany in one group, for instance. That's made life interesting, but we shouldn't forget that the Netherlands didn't qualify for the last World Cup and have found it difficult to make progress in recent international competitions. So it's almost just like warming up, isn't it, for the main event, which comes in the summer. And even that, there'll be group stages in that which won't really test the nations that we expect to be in the last eight, for instance. So it takes a long, long time to get to the expected last eight certainly, you know, in international tournaments and probably does for the Champions League, if I'm being honest.
Let's take Wes Tucker's question. He says, hello, boys. With the introduction of Olmo for Spain in International Week, what are your top three youngsters to look out for making an impact in La Liga? So obviously Olmo doesn't play in La Liga, does he? He's a very unusual career route, isn't he? And he plays for Dinamo Zagreb. And then has become a Spain international, came on, scored straight away in the game against Malta. So a couple of words, actually. Let's briefly talk about Dani Olmo first, and then we'll come back to Wes's question and chuck some very promising youngsters' names forwards.
Well, I think with Dani Olmo, he first came to recognition for us in terms of seeing him play, of course, with the under-21s in the summer, and looked to be a talent. And it's, as you said, it's an interesting career route. But he has been playing senior football for a while now, and I think he's been player of the year in Croatia as well. So Dinamo Zagreb are going to find it more difficult to keep him now because he kind of went under the radar. But I think they're going to find it difficult to keep him, one of the big clubs in La Liga, and now he's an international player. And rightly so, I think, based on what we saw in the summer in the under-21s, he showed that he was in that group of players that was a successful team, but that had enough about them to suggest that, you know, maybe more would join the likes of Fabian Ruiz and Danny Ceballos or Yazabal, who was in that team as well, who had already played full international games. So it's a difficult one to pin down the young ones that in La Liga, because we're at a stage of the season where I'd be surprised now if any others make a breakthrough and really, you know, crash onto the scene. We've got Kubo at Mallorca, for instance. We've got Rodrigo at Real Madrid. And Sufati, we didn't know anything about until the start of the season. After that, I'm looking around La Liga now, and I'm looking at, I mean, there aren't too many young players. The format now for the clubs that want to survive in La Liga is, the majority of the teams are full of experienced La Liga players now. So you look at Eibar, I don't think we've ever seen a young player come through at Eibar, have we? They've brought players in on loan, or they've had players that they've sold on pretty quickly, but actually one that's come through the ranks. Likewise with the likes of Getafe, Levante, don't tend to rely on bringing young players through their system and getting them into the first team at a young age. I think they know there's a necessity there for regular, experienced, seasoned campaigners, call it what you like, La Liga players, that will help. You know, Osasuna have come up in this season. There's no young players in their squad. I think Nacho Vidal is probably the brightest. He's a 24-year-old that they bought from Valencia. So it's difficult to... There aren't as many young players getting opportunities now in La Liga because the format is mainly established La Liga players moving from club to club. You could say Oscar Rodriguez at Leganés, who's like the Leganés, rest of the Leganés players. He's on loan from Real Madrid. They're finding it difficult. He's finding it difficult in a team that's struggling to get regular playing time. So there's almost a fear now in La Liga of blooding youngsters because of the necessity, the belief maybe that you need, you know, seasons, regular, experienced La Liga players to survive from one season to the next.
Okay, we might put that on Twitter then and see what other people come up with, you know, give us some of the...
Can you think of any outside the clubs that I was referring to? A lot of them are very similar, aren't they?
Yeah, Ferran
Torres. Yeah, Valencia, the exception.
Yeah.
They had Manu Vallejo in the last one as well, who was, yeah. And they both look classic young Valencia players, who thankfully have always done over the years. And one of the teams, I was thinking more of the, in the past you could have found a player from one of the lower ranking teams that had a promising youngster. But I'm trying to think, Betis, have they got anyone that screams out promising young player? They spent a fortune on Diego Lainez, who doesn't get a game. It's a difficult... In the past, Malaga have always had young players coming into their team, but it seems that teams are a little bit more wary now of giving youngsters opportunities. Sevilla had a great one last season, Brian Heal. We haven't seen him this season because they've signed so many good players that he's not even getting a game in the Europa League team, which is essentially is a B team for Sevilla.
And as you say, I mean, you mentioned the loan players, didn't you? So, I mean, Odegaard, before his injury, was getting rave reviews this season. Reguilon, again, two loan players who are out getting regular football and playing well, playing regularly. So that's the route, I guess, isn't it? At the moment, we are seeing that kind of young player coming through. Shall we crack on and talk about Barcelona? Right, we'll take Side's question first, and then we've got loads of questions on Rakitic. So Side says, should Barca really be looking for a new number nine, considering they just spent 120 million on Griezmann in the summer? When I read it, I maybe should have replied to him. I don't get whether he thinks they should be or they shouldn't be. Fair enough from there. I have seen them linked with Lautaro Martinez, the Argentine international who's at Inter, but he's not a number nine, is he? So maybe January, but I can't see Barca spending big in January, so maybe next summer. Where would you see them spending big? Where's the next whacking great sum of money going?
It appears Neymar. It just won't go away.
Right.
And yet, yeah. I'm looking at it. I mean, Abidal's come out this week and said, never say never. Now, Neymar's not ripping up trees at Barcelona. And since Neymar left, this can't just be a coincidence that Griezmann, Coutinho and Dembele haven't found a way to be the third player in that front three. So they sell Neymar for 220. They spend over 100 on Dembele, 120 on Griezmann, and round about 100 on Coutinho, wasn't it? Mm. And we know that the talent of all three of those players, and yet none have succeeded. I know it's early yet for Griezmann, but the early signs are not particularly encouraging if you're a Barcelona fan. So what does that tell you? Does it tell you that similar going through my mind was the fact that Real Madrid or Zidane in the summer said it's Pogba or no one. And it kind of feels now that at Barcelona that maybe Messi and Suarez think it's Neymar or no one. You know, it's you can't pin three players, Dembele, Coutinho and Griezmann, all the blame on those three players. There has to be a reason why three super talented footballers can't seem to work with Messi and Suarez. So is the answer to go back to Neymar? It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. But the question Saad made about Luis Suarez is, he's the same age as Messi, but they look poles apart in terms of conditioning of their body, the injuries that Suarez has had, the different style of play that Suarez has, where he likes to be aggressive. He plays with his back to goal more than Messi. And there's been injury issues regarding his knee. There's no doubt he's lost a yard of pace. But when he gets a chance that comes his way, every now and then you think it's time to replace him, he comes up with the goods. And in big games as well. So that has to be taken into consideration that he doesn't, his current form in the last, I'd say last couple of seasons, plus this season, his all-round form hasn't been great, but he delivers when it comes to big games, taking chances. He links up brilliantly with Lionel Messi, but it does hamper the attempts of a manager when you've got a player like Luis Suarez, who's pretty much now just become a penalty box player. So it's clear they do need to look to the future. It's just, you know, it's obviously not going to be far away because he's 32. But it is something that needs to be done. Now, we'd all think the obvious replacement is already there in Griezmann. But Griezmann has barely had an opportunity to play in that centre-forward role. And astonishingly, the other week when they played, they drew in the Slavia Prague, Arturo Vidal played up front.
Yeah.
And Griezmann was still wide. So that was the perfect opportunity to play Griezmann up front, to play closer to Lionel Messi as opposed to being on the opposite flank, or, you know, relying on service when he's running up and down in a straight line on the left wing. That was the opportunity to play Griezmann. So I personally don't think he's going to get opportunities to play at centre forward while Suarez is still at the club. But Griezmann is younger. He's 4 years younger than Suarez. So the obvious replacement that they've already spent the money on is already there. but he's got to play in the centre-forward role.
There will be Barca fans listening to us, Terry, shouting, it's all Valverde's fault, of course. That's the common factor in these players coming and not succeeding. Rakitic. So, been linked with a move to Juventus. Juventus, having said that, they don't like paying a lot of money for a player who is coming up to being out of contract. His contract is 2021. So, for obvious reasons, Barca, if they're not going to play him, they might as well sell him reasonably soon, you would have thought, wouldn't you? He's, what, 31, Rakitic? So, when I went on social media, using my new Twitter hashtag, Terry, of John Driscoll 2020, I came across a lot of debate about Rakitic. Loads of people saying he's been treated unfairly. Then it occurred to me, is it? I mean, is it unfair or is it just a business transaction? They want to play other people. They stick him on the bench. Is it right to say unfair? So I asked the question, and then the response. In fact, we got a couple of questions back before I asked that question. Actually, so Bernie Pierce says, how would you describe the contribution of Rakitic to Barcelona? Do you think the club has treated him fairly and with appreciation? I don't hear public voices from the upper management acknowledging Raki. And then Coffee says, Rakitic finally spoke out on his lack of games, said he was sad that they'd taken his ball away, didn't he? Do you blame him for staying after being told he could leave? Or is the club and Valverde being unfair? So I put the question out, and a few of the responses says no, he was clearly told he wouldn't get chances, he should look for a new team, and he knew that before the window closed in August. Shantanu says, just business, no emotions. Kaba says, no, the club, no, they told him that they want him to move on. It's understandable given the age of the players in the squad. However, some social media fans have gone too far, which is them down to them not liking Valverde. Gav says, yes and no, the club, being what they are, the club is business, regardless of who you are. The fans, however, and he says a rude word, Terry, he says, are nasty pieces of shit towards him. So fans aside, is there anything wrong with the way that Barcelona have treated Rakitic in that he's got to a certain age, they think they've got better players, you shove him out the door?
Yeah, I think that the issue is here, we don't know for certain what happened in the summer. He was one of the players linked with a swap deal, wasn't he, involving Neymar coming back to Barcelona. So his name was linked on a pretty consistent basis with being one of the players Barcelona were looking to offer to PSG. So unless we know for 100% certainty what happened in the summer between Rakitic and the people that run the club, I can't speculate on that. So I would find it. I understand his comments recently. He's at an age where he has to play. He's achieved so much at Barcelona. He's a fantastic footballer with still so much to offer. But the only thing I would say, I've been surprised that Arturo Vidal has got more opportunities this year than Rakitic, bearing in mind how good Rakitic has been at Barcelona. So that would be the thing. If I was Rakitic, that would be the issue that irritates me the most. Not the fact it's Arturo and Frankie de Jong. I think he's not daft. He can see that they've spent a lot of money on de Jong. He's going to play. Arturo is highly thought of. He's making good progress. He's probably going to play. But I think Arturo Vidal sort of leaping across him, and Sergio Roberto recently played ahead of Rakitic. So the only outcome is going to be that he leaves in January. It's going to be under a cloud, which is a shame because of, I say the service he's given to Barcelona. I'm not one for calling it service. He's been well paid, well rewarded, playing for one of the biggest clubs in Europe. But he's contributed massively to the success that they've had since he's been playing for them. So I think he's a fantastic player. And someone's going to pick up a player that's one of those at the age of 31, has never been quick. So he still gets about the pitch. I thought he was undervalued when Modric won the Ballon d'Or. I thought you could have made a case it could have been Rakitic that year, because a lot of it was based on the international tournament. I thought he had as a good, if not possibly better, World Cup than Modric. The fact it boiled down to, I think, in the end, was that Real Madrid won the Champions League, Barcelona won the league and the Copa del Rey that season. So I think highly of him. Someone's going to pick up a really good player. It can be tough. I mean, it's the big decisions have to be made. And I have to be honest, I don't think the big decisions are made frequently enough at the big clubs, and that's why they accumulate players. Real Madrid, no one really big has left. You know, I think we expected more after Ronaldo. They moan about midfield players, yet Modric and Toni Kroos, Casemiro will probably be the three that start, and a lot of people think Valverde will get the nod over them, in the, maybe for the Clasico, for instance. I don't see that. I still think it'll be Modric and Kroos and Casemiro in midfield. So big decisions have to be taken, and this is one that Barcelona have chose to do, and that probably would have been better for everybody if it had all been sorted out in the summer.
So what level is Rakitic at now? How much would you pay for him? And at what level of, say, Premier League club? Let's go from there, because obviously Juve are interested. So what level of Premier League club would try to buy him? How much would you pay for a guy who's 31 with 18 months left on his contract?
Yeah, the age is the issue. Not so much the 18 months left on his contract, because by and large, if clubs want a particular player, they'll tend to ignore that. I think it might be different if it was 6 months, but 18 months, if you're Manchester United now and you wanted a midfield player like Rakitic, 18 months on his contract, you would pay a decent amount of money. The problem is 31, there's not going to be any sellback. You know, you're going to do well. If you keep him 2 or 3 years, then it's probably one contract for Rakitic at a Manchester United. What level is he? Any level, any team in Europe he could play for. So Juventus, not a surprise. He could go and play for Bayern Munich. He'd cope there. He could play for Manchester City. He could play for Liverpool in the Premier League. He's a very, very talented footballer. It's just, it depends on what Barcelona will be looking for. I imagine now that there will be a reasonable transfer fee, because it's a little bit awkward now, isn't it, for the club to have Rakitic, you know, not whinging and moaning, but complaining. That he's not being used, not being treated with respect. It'd be best for everybody to get dealt with in January, obviously.
One more before we take a quick break. Then AJ Morales says, thoughts on the Spanish Super Cup being held in Saudi Arabia and the new four-team format. We had a couple of questions on this one. That's what I was referring to in the opening. I'm sure you were aware of that, Terry. So part of the justification... Not them. Well, you know, they're treating us for fools when they talk about the progressive politics of it. It's not that. It's the money, isn't it? They haven't taken the Super Cup to Saudi Arabia to enhance women's rights in Saudi Arabia. And it's frankly faintly insulting that they pretend they have, is my view of it. Do you have a different view, Terry?
No, and it's not even for the good of Spanish football, because the latest I heard was no major Spanish TV companies want it for a whole host of reasons. And it might not even be broadcasted in Spain. I do worry about the amount of changes that go on in football, where we're going to be in 20, 30 years' time, how things are going to be run. And this one, I just don't get. I had no problems with the Spanish Super Cup being at the start of the season. If I was being pedantic, I would probably say he should have been like the Community Shield, just one game, maybe a neutral venue. If they wanted to take that abroad somewhere different, I kind of get that. I think that's not the worst idea in the world. But to make up a competition where you've got the winners of the league, the winners of the Copa del Rey in Valencia, and then Atletico Madrid and Real Madrid, who finished second and third, and the team that actually genuinely qualified, along with Barcelona, with Valencia, who won the Copa del Rey, getting a fraction of the money that the others are getting. So I know what I would do if I was Valencia. I think I read somewhere they're getting 2 million euros prize money and the others are getting 8 and 9 million. But I know what I'd do if I was Valencia. I'd send the kids. And it's a semi-final and a final. You cannot have essentially a made-up competition and invite two teams to make up the numbers that genuinely don't qualify for the Super Cup in Spain, and then give one of the teams that genuinely qualified by winning the Spanish Cup last season a fraction of the money for turning up and playing. That's ridiculous, let alone all the political thoughts that go behind having it, the monetary reasons why it's going to be in that country, the timing of the competition as well. It is really strange. And I have to be honest, I'm getting confused now and frustrated with the two groups that we have, the La Liga and the Spanish FA. There's so much controversy between Tebas and Rubiales. It seems they're at loggerheads on every decision that has to be made. There's court cases left, right and centre. There's, you know, complaints about the kickoff or the Clásico time. At one stage, they were going to try and have that at 1 o'clock in the afternoon and a midweek. But I think that, thankfully, that's been resolved. Monday night football has been stopped this season. And I think there is a genuine need for it, as long as it was done properly and it wasn't Leganés or Alavés every Monday. So I think, excuse me, I'm finding the whole political environment in Spanish football frustrating, if I'm being perfectly honest. And I do worry that there'll be a breakaway. It's very similar to what we used to have in England with the Football League and the FA. And the Premier League was born out of that frustration. And lots of things have changed. A lot of it, I have to say, for the majority that is good for football, but not all of it. And I do wonder if in Spain there's going to be a breakup, a Super La Liga or something in years to come because of the ongoing controversy, disagreements between the two parties in Spain.
Would you trust Tebas to run the whole thing himself? So he's the, again, people probably don't know. I agree with you. It's frustrating. So Tebas is La Liga chief. And they don't get on. There was the political clash. I guess there's a personal clash as well between the two men. I'm not convinced. We'll get on to the Twitter, the social media situation in a minute. But I'm not convinced by the decisions they're making. I don't see a brilliant commercial mind there for La Liga. I think they're making bad decisions.
I think Tebas has made improvements, hasn't he? And his ambitions are clear to see. I mean, he's been very public in what he wants to do for La Liga. It is difficult. I don't know either of the gentlemen at all, just from what we read in newspapers and stuff. But it does need sorting out. We even had the recent issue, didn't we, only this week about the game in Miami between things Villarreal and Atletico Madrid. That rears its head every season now. And then La Liga want to do it. Spanish FA stop it. Clubs get involved. So it there needs to be the organisation does need to be better. For marketing wise. You know, for lots of reasons, and the fact that the two heads don't get on doesn't help matters.
Yeah, and so that's not being played at the moment, is it? It's being played in Villarreal, where it should be played, of course, at the moment. That's the latest court decision, isn't it?
Yep, no, I agree with you. It's difficult. If you're a season ticket holder and you get a game taken away, then where does that leave you? You know, I know we have the NFL playing here now, don't we? That they have games in London. It seems to fit well with the NFL organisation. But you have Green Bay Packers, the only team that haven't played a game here. And they won't. They've said they'll never, ever do it because in the NFL you get nine home games a season. Every game at the Green Bay Packers stadium has been sold out since the 60s. There's like a 30, 40 waiting list for a season ticket. So how can you take a home game at the Green Bay Packers and bring them to London when people have been waiting 30 years before they can get a ticket? So it's a similar thing in Spanish football. They possibly thought that Villarreal, they might get away with taking a home game off of Villarreal. The supporters might not object to it too much. Whereas you could imagine some of the other stadiums, if you said to Seville, Valencia, you're going to miss a home game as a season ticket holder, but you can go to Miami if you want. It's not the dumb thing. I get why leagues want to do it. I think the Italian league want to do it as well, don't they? And they've had their format of the Super Cup, which is a one-off final. They've had that in different countries as well. So I think La Liga and Serie A are competing against each other and also thinking along the same lines.
Right, let's take a quick break and then we'll come back and have a look at the rest of the questions and have a look at the social media clampdown in the La Liga.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores. You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Welcome back. It doesn't make the most interesting podcasting for a man to bleat on about his Twitter account, but my harrowing experience, hashtag pray for John, has thrown light on a ridiculous clampdown by La Liga and Twitter, two organizations run by enlightened minds, of course. It turns out I'm not the only friend of La Liga who has incurred the wrath of the bots. I have shared La Liga highlights when there was no UK TV deal in place. Wickedness in the extreme, obviously, in the current world situation. But it turns out I'm not alone. So Richard Cosmala, who's a friend of the podcast, Terry, and a friend of La Liga, he goes out to the games, he watches games, pays his own money, and he advocates for La Liga. So what he's been doing, giving and again, is sharing a quick video that he's taken at the game. Bang, Twitter account suspended, can't get it back again. So Richard set up a new one, just with his name, Richard Cosmala, if you want to follow him. He's a big fan of Spanish football. Why on earth would they do that? And most organisations would be absolutely delighted if their customers, if their advocates, share their stuff on social media. Now, we're not talking about sitting there with your mobile phone pointed at the telly while you stream it on Periscope. Obviously, that's it. You know, that's out of order. But there are other cases. Someone was at Mendizorroza, and they shared, there was a goal celebration, and they came over to where he was. He had his phone going. The players came over. They celebrated, shared it. Twitter ban. If you have more than one offence, then you can't get it back again. It's very hard dealing with Twitter because they don't employ real people. You can go around, you can abuse people on Twitter, it would seem, with near impunity. If you want to threaten politicians or racially abuse footballers, it seems to be pretty easy place to go and do that. But infringe, a ludicrous copyright infringement is what annoys me. So that's where Twitter and La Liga is. I think it's a dangerous situation because I think La Liga should be promoting itself. It's all right to extract the value. You're entitled to do that. If it's your business, you can take some money out of it, fair enough. But you've also got to look to the future. You've got to grow the business. You've got to grow the brand, as we call it now. And the way to do that in these days is to have people sharing bits and pieces of your stuff over social media. It's what you want. I don't understand why they are clamping down on it and the aggressive attitude to people who are their friends and their advocates.
How does it differ from the Premier League? Do they have similar regulations?
I think the Premier League have a better control at the first point. So if you record stuff off your telly, a Premier League game off the telly and share the goals. So you're effectively, you're nicking the highlights off Sky Sports.
Yeah.
So they will take that down. Now, I've never done it, so I don't know what the penalty is. Now, La Liga have obviously got some ongoing arrangement with Twitter going on now. Well, they've made series of copyright complaints to Twitter, who it would seem have got an automatic system set up to somehow detect it. I can't imagine there's a person going through making a decision on all of these things. But what was particularly frustrating in my particular case was that I went on YouTube. There's a share facility on the video. So the 90-second edits that they put on, you click share and you can share it. It goes straight to your Twitter page. You click share Twitter and it goes to your Twitter page. So you think, you know, surely that is them inviting you to do it. If they give you the facility to share it, whereas the Premier League is a bit, they're just more switched on in that it's harder to share stuff. You sort of actively have to go and nick it from Premier League stuff. So for example, if Sky shares, so you can share some stuff. Don't think you can't ever share anything, because for example, in the UK, Premier Sports share it, you can retweet that. And if beIN Sports, in where they hold the rights, can share it, you can retweet that. So again, with the Premier League stuff in Sky, with Sky, if Sky puts something up, you can share it. And again, if BT put their clips of the Champions League up, you can share that. But you've just got to be reasonable about banning people, is my view on that. And I don't know of a big campaign by the Premier League to throw people off Twitter, whereas La Liga do seem to be doing that. Now, just one quick word before we move on. Someone from La Liga did contact me, so thank you very much to that individual, and he's going to have a look into it. But how far he gets, he's not promising, because you're dealing with the legal department, you're dealing with whoever designed the bots, the algorithms and all of that. It's a frustrating situation. So I'm afraid the word is be careful of sharing any La Liga content unless you go through the official channel. So just reshare what's on Premier Sports, for example, in the UK is the easy way to do it. However, Owen Thompson makes a point. He says, please remind everyone how good it is for La Liga and its viewers to have the table as close as competitive as we're experiencing right now. 5 points, Barca and Madrid with games to play, admittedly, between first and ninth. Can this last the whole season? It's a good point, isn't it? It's a very, very competitive La Liga at the moment. And, you know, let's not get too sidelined by decisions and the political side of it. The football is still something to enjoy and to behold.
It is. And during this break, I've actually been thinking about how it's going to go. And I listened to the top, the big three, Barca, Real, Atletico Madrid. One of those I expect to win it. But I've been thinking during this break and thinking, why not Sevilla? Because we've seen enough of them now to know that it's a slightly different version of Sevilla. They have a fantastic squad. I spoke earlier about Brian Hill not getting a game in the second 11, which they're using in the Europa League. And the second 11 is some team as well. They're going great guns in that. I see an experienced set of players. They have the quality. They're showing consistency. The one thing that was lacking was the sign of an obvious goal scorer. But in Ocampos, he's contributing heavily in terms of goals now. Luke de Jong is getting amongst the goals now. And I'm not expecting for one moment Luke de Jong to get 25 goals between now and the end of the season. But with his style of play, it favours the team. If he could chip in with a dozen in La Liga between now and the end of the season to add to the two that he's already got, that would be a help. Everywhere I look around, they've got a double that's playing in the B team in the Europa League. There's players not getting games. Ronnie Lopez, 25 million. We haven't seen him yet in La Liga. Muniz de Boer is another player. I know we got a tweet this week asking about, does he deserve an opportunity from the AJ Morales account. Does he deserve a chance to start? He got two goals in the recent 5-2 win against Dudelange. Munir got a hat-trick in that game. He doesn't get a game. Javier Hernandez was on the bench for the Betis game. Jean Jourdain was on the bench for the game against Betis. So they've got the squad. And I just wonder if Barca, Real Madrid, Atletico are not at their best, And this continues the form they've shown so far this season. The one the two things lacking from Sevilla will be the belief that they could win a league title, and maybe we don't know yet enough about the manager, whether he would be able to lead and manage a group of players to what would be a spectacular success. But I really fancy Sevilla to go close this season.
It would be good to see someone go deep into the season still in the title race, wouldn't it? Outside of the top three and outside of the top two, really. So, yeah, that would be great. Let's crack on. Kieran says, has, at Terry Gibson 88, ever disliked a manager more than he does Calleja at Villarreal? Well, yeah, I can answer this one. Oh, yes. Ron Atkinson might be...
Definitely.
Terry's autobiography is still available. You go on his website and you find out exactly who he doesn't like by reading that.
Kayaka didn't get a mention.
No. So I think we've said it. I think that I don't rate him. I think he's made a good team worse. I mean, they're not a disastrous team. They've still got good players, haven't they?
It irritates me that I think with a better manager, they could be, you know, pushing up towards where I'm talking about Sevilla could be this season. That's what irritates me. How they underachieved spectacularly last season, and I'm concerned that they're going to do it again now. They're the team that contribute most to the national team at the moment. Yet they've lost the last time out against Mallorca. They've lost recently to Eibar. He just frustrates me. I don't dislike him. I don't know him. He just frustrates me that he's got a really good set of players. And I don't see him being positive enough and decisive enough to lead VRL to where they should be in the league.
Brownie says, could we have a few words on David Villa after he announced that he'll retire in January? Was he Messi's greatest ever strike partner? I saw an article by Pete Jensen this week in which he was advocating... didn't sort of nail his colours to the mast in the end, but he would say that there is definitely a case that Villa is Spain's greatest ever striker, because you compare him, obviously, to Raul, and you'd say that he was part of a team that won stuff, whereas Raul wasn't. You compare him to Torres. He outlasted Torres in terms of being a top-level striker, and his goal-scoring record was incredible. He did different jobs. He went to Barca at a relatively late stage of his career and readapted there and did what many players haven't done and worked around Barcelona's style.
Yeah, exactly.
Messi. So there's a case that, you know, he's you know, people say don't bandy the word great around. David Villa has been a great player.
Oh, fantastic. And do you know what? Strangely enough, And he went to Atletico and adapted to them as well, didn't he? We shouldn't forget that, to nail down a position and be trusted in Simeone's team, when we know that the methods needed to succeed at Atletico are far different from Barcelona. But my best memories of David Villa, and I think he arguably is Spain's greatest striker. The three you mentioned, it's hard to pick between those three, absolute legends, all three of them. My favourite spell with David Villa was at Valencia, where he played as a traditional centre-forward with Mata behind. David Silva was playing as well. And everything was fast-paced, and he was lethal in front of goal. And he was the focal point of the attack as well, wasn't he? He was in the centre-forward position, which we saw him play a lot of times for Spain, but there were other games for Spain where he played slightly wider. For Barcelona, he played wide. For Atletico, he played wide as well. But my best recollections of watching David Villa at the Mestalla, leading the attack, scoring spectacular goals, a sensational football player. I loved watching David Villa play for whoever he was playing for.
Right, we've got a couple more questions. Two more questions. Andrew says, how is it that Spain, I'm not sure I agree with this question, but Andrew's asked it, how is it that Spain can do VAR so flawlessly?
Yeah, I saw that. I thought it might be sarcastic.
Compared to how England, yeah, but then the second half, make sure it's not, compared to how England appears to be losing its mind over the system. So that bit is definitely right. England is making an almighty mess of it. But it wasn't great. It hasn't been great in Spain. I was an advocate of VAR until they started using it, and then I think I just think they keep making a mess of it. It's sort of a different. They've messed it up in a different way in England than they have in Spain, because in Spain the maddening thing is the amount of time they spend making these decisions. And you're thinking, this is football. Going back to the previous conversation about making the most of it, making the most and growing your game. This is football throwing away its biggest advantage, which is the fast-flowing, easy-on-the-eye nature of the sport. If you're stopping and having a five-minute argument about whether a guy's heel is offside, I think that's just nuts. They were just a season ahead of England, and so they were having that discussion. I remember Morales having his heel off, brilliant Levante goal, and Morales had his heel offside 20 seconds earlier. It was like the Sheffield United goal at the weekend.
Exactly.
And it's almost like no one in England had watched the Spanish league and was going to learn the lessons, which, funnily enough, they might not have.
I think it's two big issues, isn't it? It's those close offsides where before we had VAR, he's either offside or he's not. And now we've got VAR, we're thinking, oh, is he offside enough? That needs clearing up. So perhaps the law of the game needs adjusting. That I don't know. I don't know how you would do that. And the other one is penalties. I think, particularly in the Premier League, the reluctance of the VAR officials at Stockley Park to overturn decisions made by their colleagues. That's a big issue, I think, because there's been some blatant penalties not given in the Premier League. And you look back, you think, it's a foul, or it's a handball, it's clear. But we've had this clear and obvious error. I also have an issue with the offsides when we don't get straight lines on the pitch.
No.
We all believe it immediately when you see it on television. Then you see a newspaper still photograph. And I look and I think, that's not straight, that line. No. So it's slightly off angle. I think the offside should be, perhaps there should be a time limit on the officials. So that they have to, you know, if you've only got 20 seconds, you can look at two or three angles quickly. Is it clearly a mistake by the official? If he's a yard offside, no problem at all. If he's a foot offside, I'm not talking foot as in feet, I'm talking measurement. If he's offside, it's clear, yes. Now, do we need one of these where we've got lines out and we've got squares going up and down and we're looking at, and is it part of his body offside? Then I think those are the ones that people don't want to see. We want to see goals scored. We don't want them to see them disallowed because of an armpit, wasn't there? Roberto Firmino recently. The measurement made that his armpit was in a position of offside and he can score with his armpit. I don't think I've ever seen a goal scored with someone's armpit. it was disallowed.
Yeah, no, crazy, wasn't it? When they start having to get the slide rule out, as football commentators would say, then it's no longer an obvious correction of a mistake, is it? When you're having to start drawing the graphs and all of that. Right, we've got time, Terry. Go on, make that point.
And I was going to say, it's been proven that they haven't got the technology yet to actually, those lines are not correct.
No.
The technology isn't there.
It's not the goal line technology where you have the cameras in the goal and you've got the line and you've got the crossbar and it's, you know, you can sort it out. It's there's an element of doubt, and people who are advocating it are pretending or convincing themselves that there's not an element of doubt, but there is an element of doubt about those offside decisions. Yeah. Anyway, one last question, James Brown. I think we've got about 29 seconds left to answer this one, Terry. James Brown says, can we talk about Osasuna's ridiculous record for more than 30 seconds? This week. I don't feel like they've been getting the credit they deserve.
I think in Spain they have. I've noticed that when I've been there working for La Liga TV. It's a constant talking point. It's been brilliant to watch them. I mean, they did the majority of the record in the second of last season, but to continue it this season with a draw against Barcelona. I like watching Osasuna. I like their style of play. I like the fact they've got a style. And I think regular listeners of the podcast know that we all appreciate what Jimmy Avila is doing there this season. So Roberto Torres, Oyer Lathabel in midfield. I think they've got a really good team, and that they actually look now as if they think they're bulletproof at home. They think they're no one's going to beat them. So it's great to see a newly promoted team play with that belief. and long may it continue. It's they've certainly got the confidence that they can stay unbeaten at home.
Have we done over 30 seconds?
Or 28.
Right, James, we will keep on talking about Osasuna in short bursts throughout the course of the season. Well played, Osasuna.
And, yeah, brilliant.
The Osasuna fans who tune into the podcast, and we there are some. Promise you there are some. They're not all Barca fans arguing about Valverde, you know, and Real Madrid fans swinging wildly from ecstasy to despair. From week to week, there are plenty of other fans of La Liga who tune in. So thank you very much to everybody who's got in touch. Keep on getting in touch. Have a look at the Facebook page, which is La Liga Weekly. Get in touch with us via that. Get in touch with us on Twitter ahead of next week as well. Enjoy the podcast. Enjoy your La Liga football, because the La Liga football is back next week, and we're back with another podcast. We'll see you for that. Bye-bye.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.